This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Elaine Grant, sitting in for Ryan Warner. Committees at the state capitol considered dozens and dozens of bills this week, but all of those were overshadowed by four, the package of Democratic gun bills introduced last week that are now moving through the House. To talk about that and more from under the Golden Dome, I'm joined by Colorado Public Radio's government reporter, Megan Verlee.
Hey, Elaine.
Hey, Megan. Before we start, let me remind people briefly what these bills do. One would require background checks for all gun sales. A second imposes a fee for those background checks. A third limits the size of ammunition magazines. And the final bill bans concealed weapons on college campuses. They passed through their committees without a single Republican vote. And today, I understand they'll be debated by the full House.
Yes, and we have already been warned by the House Speaker that if opponents want to talk into the wee hours of Saturday morning on these bills, he's going to let them. And that very well might happen. To judge from what's already gone on this week, people are feeling very verbose on this subject. Yesterday, three of the bills had hearings and appropriations, which is usually a really short process. Lawmakers just ask about the fiscal implications the bills have for the state. Republicans on the panel did their best to draw those hearings out as long as possible. And then when they were shut down by the majority Democrats, one of them called it Soviet-style government.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it's very, very likely today we'll see a full-blown filibuster in the House. And in that case, I've packed a lot of extra snacks and some comfortable clothes, and I've told my husband not to expect me home anytime soon because this debate may not end anytime soon.
Yeah, these days, Megan, you are, I think, at the legislature more than you are at home.
It's a good thing I don't have to pay them rent.
So, Megan, are these bills expected to pass?
I think generally their odds are good because Democrats hold a very sizable majority in the House. It would take five of them breaking with their party to kill any of these bills if Republicans on their side stay united in their opposition. But not every Democrat supports the gun control package, so we will be looking to see which of them vote no and how many of them vote no.
Give me a sense of how much activity there's been around these bills this week.
Obviously, these were always going to be high-profile hearings and high-profile debates, but I really got my first taste of how high a profile when I arrived at the parking lot across the street from the Capitol on Tuesday morning. And there were more people lined up to pay for their parking than there were on the first day of the session or for the state of the state, which are usually the two busiest days.
Wow.
There were so many people trying to sign up to testify at the first hearing that I overheard the sergeants worrying that the fire department might shut them down for being over capacity in the room.
Uh-huh. But clearly that didn't happen. All these people trying to testify, did they tend toward one side or another?
I think it's fair to say that the large, large majority of the people at these hearings oppose stricter gun control laws. A lot of them came wearing stickers from the Rocky Mountain gun owners that read, "I vote pro-gun."
Mm-hmm.
And for all the bills, the committee chairs closed the hearing before all the opponents that wanted to were able to speak, although I should say that was after hours of testimony. I talked late Tuesday night with Sean Vierhoff. He's a gun rights supporter who actually endured both days of testimony this week. And he says he plans to stay on these bills every step of the way.
It's not the end of the line. It's got to go through the full House and it's got to go through the full Senate. There's still several steps before these bills become law, so we have several chances in order to fight these bills.
So it sounds like if these pass, the Aurora Theater attack could leave a major footprint on Colorado's gun laws.
Yes, but one thing I've actually been finding interesting is just how much legislation the Aurora movie theater shooting has generated beyond these gun bills. Republicans introduced a bunch of bills loosening gun restrictions that were their response. And then this week, former House Speaker Frank McNulty had a bill that would have changed the burden of proof for when somebody pleads not guilty by reason of insanity.
I should clarify right now, when someone claims they're not guilty by reason of insanity, that under state law, the jury is supposed to presume that they are, in fact, insane. The burden rests with the prosecution to argue that they're not.
Exactly. McNulty said he was listening to a story about James Holmes, the accused Aurora shooter, who is widely expected to plead insanity, and thought that has to change.
And it struck me at that moment that that was inherently unfair, mainly to the families and to the surviving victims. Inherently unfair, and the more I looked into it, the more it became absolutely clear that we need to reform the insanity defense in Colorado.
So what happened to that bill?
it died. The House Speaker sent it to his so-called kill committee, which did live up to its name in this case. But I think the bigger point here is just how much major news events ripple through the state legislature. By the time lawmakers meet in January, they've got 8 months of news events, large and small, stored up that many of them want to react to through bills. So you see all these different legislative efforts directed at different elements of an event. And it's not just Aurora. For instance, the Jessica Ridgway murder prompted at least 2 bills this year, one that would have greatly increased penalties for first-time sex offenders against children, and another making it harder for judges to close preliminary hearings, which the judge in the Ridgway case did. Now, both those bills were sponsored by Republicans, and both of them have died in committee as well.
Uh-huh. But certainly, all of the events that we're reporting on every day, many of them do wend their way to the statehouse eventually.
Exactly. And I think it's always interesting to see what form they show up in.
If you're just joining us, this is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Elaine Grant, sitting in for Ryan Warner. My guest is Megan Verlee, our government reporter here at CPR. She joins us every Friday to tell us what's going on at the state capitol. Megan, on another note, you often give us predictions about how a bill will do, if it's likely to pass, likely to die. But you always qualify it. And this week, as I understand, we got a good illustration of why you do that.
Indeed. And that is because a bill ordering the federal government to turn over to the state all of its agricultural public lands in Colorado passed its committee hearing. This is about as Republican a bill as you can get. It's a states' rights policy that started in the 1960s as something called the Sagebrush Rebellion. And it's the kind of bill that you can usually just assume is never going to make it out of a democratically controlled committee.
So what happened?
Well, apparently there was a whole bunch of procedural confusion at the end of the hearing. The committee killed the bill, and then they resurrected it. And in the process, they violated some of the procedural rules of the Senate.
Uh-huh.
It's all very tangled. It would take way too much jargon to explain. But the bottom line here is that things got really messy, and now the legislative lawyers have to sort it out, and they're still trying to figure out what to do. I talked with committee chair Angela Hirone, and she says she's been told they've never quite encountered this particular situation before.
Because only I would come up with something that has never happened in the history. I'm trying to make my mark in some way, and I guess that was one way to do it.
Senator Hirone says if they end up passing a new rule to deal with this sort of situation, she wants them to name it after her. And on a slightly more serious note, she really praised the Republicans on the committee for being understanding of the situation and for trying to work with her to unsnarl it. And given that this is a week so full of partisan strife over the gun bills, I think it's nice to just sort of be reminded that of how collegial the legislature can be when they're not dealing with these really hot issues.
And I think that, by and large, that doesn't make it to the press. People don't really realize that behind the scenes.
People at the legislature like to brag about what a large percentage of bills pass with bipartisan support and never get covered. But that's because they're often also really boring bills. But yes, a large percentage of the legislation goes through with bipartisan support every year.
Very interesting. What's coming up at the Capitol next week?
Well, not to be outdone by the 4 Democratic gun bills that have been in the headlines all this week, Republicans have 4 gun bills of their own up in committee next week. They range from allowing people to carry concealed weapons without a permit to allowing people who have a concealed carry permit to avoid background checks for future gun purchases. There's also a bill up that would repeal the crime of adultery. It's an archaic, obsolete law. It isn't ever invoked, as far as I know. But repealing it should be a good opportunity for lawmakers to sneak in as many off-color witticisms and schoolyard-level jokes as possible. So I expect it'll get a little more attention than most technical bills.
And if it's a fun hearing, I imagine we might be seeing it mentioned on CPR's new government blog.
An opening to plug the blog, convenient. Here at the end of the interview. Yes, we have a new place where you can find all of CPR's government coverage. That means lots and lots of legislative stories right now by yours truly. And it includes more detailed versions of many of those stories, a lot of behind-the-scenes tidbits as I get them up, and photos from the state capitol. It's called Check and Balance, and you can find a link on our website, cpr.org. If you go there, look for a light blue state government news link on the lower left-hand side of our homepage. And I'm really hoping people will check it out. It's kind of a labor of love for me right now, and it would be great if we could get some readers to show their love, too.
It definitely would. So go visit that website, cpr.org. Thanks so much, Megan.
Thank you, Elaine.
Megan Verlee is Colorado Public Radio's government reporter.